welcome to Medi-Call episode 206. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. We are going to talk Commander nonstop today because we are knee-deep in Commander spoilers. The whole 360-something of them. You know, we don't have all 360 of them, but this is a big set full of 360 of them. And I don't know, what are we about, halfway through them at this point?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, this is exciting. I'm jacked for this set, I have to say. This is whenever we get these new sets during this weird pandemic era that we're living in, it gives me something to look forward to, just getting these little previews dropped over the course of the day. I can just kind of like tune into my phone every once in a while and check out what the latest buzz is on the interwebs.
Sure.
Sometimes I check them out and I'm like rolling my eyes a little bit about the latest mythic that is like seemingly overpowered or whatever. But for the most part, I'm like digging some of the stuff that I'm seeing. The Turtle Shaman, I'm really excited about. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about there.
I don't remember. I've seen a lot of spoilers. I would need to just see the card again to remember.
Okay, we'll definitely be talking about the Turtle Shaman today, so we'll just tease that one. But before we get into that, ManaTraders.com is our wonderful sponsor. Use the promo code MODERNMEDICAL, all one word, no hyphens, no spaces, for 14% off your purchase at checkout, your subscription. ManaTraders.com is your subscription rental service for your rental needs on Modo, even in paper. And hey, what better thing to do with your account? Even though our promo code has the word modern in it, you can use it for Commander. You can play Commander online. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's a little boisterous.
It is.
But it's a thing that can be done, and it's pretty fun. It's nice to just sleeve up cards. My favorite part about playing Commander online is the fact that you don't have to keep on de-sleeving like the one copy of Mana Vault you have to put in like your 9 decks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you only need to own one copy of every card, and it just shows up in all the decks. It's just transferred automatically. What a wonderful life. Or if you rent for Mana Traders, you just, you know, do your thing anyway. It doesn't really matter.
Yep.
So the topic for the day is auto includes. So I'm going to bring us into that because before we get into the spoilers, I want to just bring up something that's been on my mind lately regarding Commander, and probably a lot of people's mind. But one of the greatest parts about this format is that you get to like sort of express yourself through the game. I don't know if you feel that too. I think that I definitely get to do that as a player. You know, my play style and my idea of what it is to play Magic really shines in my deck building. And the more and more we get these products released for specifically designed for Commander, the more restraint we have on our deck building choices, because I feel like we have these powerful cards being released, and I'm always getting to the point where I have this giant stack of cards when I'm building decks, and I have the hardest time just cutting cards to get to 100. And now the number of auto includes that I have, you know, for each of these colored decks is growing because we're getting all these cards printed that are just so strong. It's like, if I'm in black, I've got to include X or Y. And it's like, why not?
So I think, I mean, I guess what your definition of auto include is the part that makes me go, well, maybe, quite possibly. Because I look at this list, and some of these cards might not necessarily be auto-includes in every single deck that does that stuff.
Okay,
might quite possibly will be, so I mean...
Well, then I think we'll have a rousing debate about it then. So I think I put some on here with some question marks because I figured that'll cause some discussion between us. But
sure.
Some of these informed a little bit by the rate of appearance from EDHREC, which is a wonderful source of information, but it does cause some ubiquity in EDH decks. But it is a great place to get started. There are just so many cards in the game that when you're trying to find synergies for a particular commander, it's a really good place to start when it's like, okay, I'm building like a Derevi comes to mind or whatever. What is all the untap and tap cards that, you know, go with that commander? Rather than searching Scryfall for the word tap and untap and just like going through pages and pages of cards, because that word appears a lot.
Sure.
You know, it's a good place to start.
I agree with that.
Now, that said, I think we could start with the most powerful thing to do in Commander. And I hope you'd agree with me on this one. That is to accumulate lands, accumulate resources, right?
I would agree with that statement, yes.
Okay, and I think that a lot of players agree with that, because some of the most played cards in all Commander decks are the Mana Rocks and the Mana Ramp. In fact, when I'm looking at the top 100 played cards in Commander on EDH Rec, this is among all five colors. I'm looking at Cultivate as the third most played card in 50% of decks. And that's just assuming that like 50% of decks have access to green in some way, shape, or form. So I think that's saying that damn near all green decks play Cultivate. And Kodama's Reach is up here too, 36%. I don't know why there's a difference between the two. Probably just availability.
Yeah, it's like card cost.
But yeah, it's like if you can, you're going to want to put lands into play. You know, Cultivate, Farseek, that kind of thing. But
sure,
let's start with the ways that you can accumulate mana or resources for all colors, and that is in artifacts. So poster child of the format, Sol Ring, right? Damn near grows on trees these days, right? It's like printed in every commander related product there is. And thank God for that, because it could be a very expensive card. 77% of decks on EDH Rec.
I have a deck that doesn't have Sol Ring in it.
Do you have a reason for that, or are you just like, I'm gonna be alternative?
So originally I was playing both Nolrod and Stony Silence in the deck, and so I just didn't want to shut down my Sol Ring, because like typically the games you're playing Sol Ring, like, it's kind of a big part of your strategy. Like, you keep your hand based on the fact you have Sol Ring, and like, to like be playing these cards that are like contradictive to your Sol Ring is like really awkward. Like, because if you draw them at the point in time where you might actually need to use them, it's probably because like your opponent has Sol Ring.
Yeah.
And so drawing your Sol Ring when you put one of those things in play is like very, very not helpful. And it's a control deck, so I don't really want to have a dead draw ever if I can avoid it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So kind of a corner case then in that scenario, right? Like, if you're just specifically going to be like, everyone plays Mana Rocks, so I'm going to make a deck that's like, I hate on Mana Rocks, then you're actively avoiding them yourself.
It's not even like I hate on Mana Rocks. It's just like, realistically, I have a bunch of Wraths that are like, destroy all non-land permanents.
Yeah.
Because like, you have to be able to beat planeswalkers and like enchantments and stuff. So like, being able to just start from scratch on the board is really important. Okay. And so I would prefer my mana to all be lands. So I just cut all of the Mana Rocks from that deck.
Sure. Sure. Okay.
But I think, yes, I think in general, it is very infrequent that I would expect. I am surprised that number is 77%.
Yeah,
is not a higher percentage.
I agree. I think it's probably more realistically, like, in paper, it's more like 99%. But it's probably just an availability thing. Yeah. Like, you only have so many Sol Rings, and a lot of people have like 13 and 14 decks. You know, so
yeah.
Like, okay. So yeah, probably the single most played in Commander, auto include, right? That is like the definition of auto include. It's like, there's really no reason not to include it, except for when you're actively doing things that shut it down, right? So
yeah.
Then second to that is like Arcane Signet. It's like the most efficient 2-mana rock. It doesn't rely on the types of colors that your opponent plays. Anything that just is like, you know, the color of your commander's identity, it just fits perfectly into your deck. It doesn't come into play tapped, et cetera, et cetera. Same reason for like a command tower being in that role. Arcane Signet, thank God, getting a reprint in Commander Legends, it needed it. It was like a $3, $4 card. But another one that just, like, if you've got 14 decks, you probably need 14 Arcane Signets, right?
Yep.
Unless one of them is like a Karn deck or something brown. That this taps for nothing then.
Yeah.
Similarly, Mana Vault, Mana Crypt, like, if you play online and those cards are like $3 or $4, like, yeah, you're probably going to be including them in all of your decks, but in paper, they're like pretty restrictive to have and are less likely to be played. However, if they could be affordable, I think more players would just, like, you know, toss them in to your decks.
Yeah,
it's not a big reason.
I agree with that. I agree that most players toss them in. I think there is, like, because they do have downsides, I think. And this is the way I think about, you know, these types of cards, is like, realistically, you're trying to hit your land drop every turn in 90% of commander decks. And like to play this is like, yes, it'll get you ahead. But if you don't have something that's paying you off, like if you don't have enough payoffs in your deck, then playing these sorts of cards aren't actually going to be particularly helpful. Because they're functionally one shot when it comes to Mana Vault. Like paying four mana is basically giving up a turn. So realistically, Mana Crypt isn't, but the damage over time can add up. But if you don't have some sort of explosive payoff that reimburses you like the cards that you're investing in these cards, it's kind of hard to justify them. And sometimes that reimbursement is like the game is ending. So like if I play a Mana Vault and I tap it to cast Tooth and Nail Entwined, I'm not gonna feel bad about having tapped my Mana Vault. But like if I tap Mana Vault for like an acidic slime, I'm less inclined to tap my Mana Vault for that. Because eventually I'll take some damage, and then a couple turns down the road to quit taking damage, I'll have to like invest in this thing. So like Mana Crypt less so is of a bother, but Mana Vault is one of those that does have some diminishing returns.
Okay, then moving forward, like other two mana rocks should be included in this list as well. Signets, Talismans, Felwar Stone, for the same reasons. Talismans are kind of expensive. I'm kind of bummed to see the what do you call them? There's like the diamonds, the fire diamonds and the
yeah, marble diamond, fire diamond, yeah. Marble diamond, charcoal diamond, yeah.
So those appearing in the preview cards right now for Commander Legends is kind of bumming me out because that means that we're probably not going to see the talismans appearing. The talismans That's need a reprint true. Big time. They are like the Mirrodin ones are like $7-$8 some of them, and they're I think they're pretty vital. Like just efficient two mana rocks are just so important to Commander. The three mana rocks, having to wait an extra turn to play your mana rock is a big deal. You know what I mean? And it's a big enough deal to take one damage every time you tap for your mana.
Like the only one that I could say as far as three mana rocks are concerned that belongs on this list is Chromatic Lantern.
Chromatic Lantern, I like the new one too, Skyclave, whatever, that you can tap, you can pay six for three copies of it. Because you can upgrade it to like a chromatic whatever. Gilded Lotus, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. But that Chromatic Lantern feels like the only one that might be a discussion for potential auto includes, but I think the last two you have on this list are Solemn Simulacrum and Burnished Heart. So kind of that mana ramp lands piece of like I'm putting lands into play with my artifact.
Yeah. Yeah, those are questionable, but in colors where you don't have access to like the green cards that can just like put like lands directly onto the battlefield, like your mana rocks are vulnerable to like the red like Shatterstorm type of effects. So if your idea is to play like a white deck that just wants to like literally ramp, I think that those cards are pretty important to those strategies. So
I agree.
I don't know about auto includes. That's probably strong for those. I think Solemn Simulacrum is probably more likely to be in that category than Burnished Heart, but it's, it's up there.
I would agree with that statement. I think Solemn, just like being an abusable ETB that also just kind of randomly pays you off when you block with it or sacrifice it or Wrath of Board, is like the abusable ETB part makes it better than Burnished Heart, because like you have to invest three mana into Burnished Heart every time you utilize it. So if you're just like constantly reanimating Burnished Heart, you're still paying three more mana to get your two lands. So
yeah, Solemn being blinkable is a big deal too. It was just kind of the ETB comment you had. The last artifact I have on the list, and the only one that doesn't have to do with mana, is Lightning Greaves. And it's kind of like one of those things where you invest in your commander. If your commander doesn't have an effect on ETB, it's sort of like you have to do something to protect it so that you can utilize it, especially when it's costing like 5, 6, and 7 mana. And so something like this is just such a low opportunity cost to keep it alive. It's often just worthwhile for that purpose, but the addition of like giving an aggressive commander haste is like just there's just so many reasons to play Lightning Greaves. It's like, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you can just generally use this in like a deck full of creatures, just like giving haste to things like Arcanist the Omnipotent if it happens to be in your deck or something similar is just a very large upside. The zero mana equip being huge too. I think depending on what you're doing with your deck, you might err towards
Swiftfoot Boots over Lightning Greaves, just because if you need your commander or whatever various creature you are putting this on to be targetable by you, then you would probably be more interested in Hexproof than Shroud. So
looking at this list, we've already committed quite a few cards, and this is Artifact, so this kind of belongs in just about every deck, right? Like, you have to commit your 10 or so slots to your ramp plan, right? And so that's already a good portion of your deck is accounted for. Now you have some choices in how you're going to do that and what that looks like. You can be creative about what types of ramp spells you want to use. If you're willing to sacrifice some of the mana color selection to get some payoff later in the game, like Mind Stone or Commander Sphere is the one that you can sacrifice for a card draw, that kind of thing. You slow you down a little bit, but then maybe later on in the game you can just cash it in. Or Thought Vessel is another one. But just in there's just like just a generalized pool of like 2 and 3 mana rocks that you kind of like have to include to remain competitive. And missing lands in the early turns or missing mana rocks in the early turns just puts you so far behind. Not having access to those resources is such a detriment to your game.
Yeah.
Going on to lands, I think the number one here is Command Tower. And it's like you have to have a very good reason not to run Command Tower. And I don't think there is one aside from just being in a mono brown deck.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's any reason. I mean, like mono colored decks, I don't think you need to play Command Tower.
You do it for the lulz.
You do it because you can. It's actively worse though than playing a basic land. Right. So if you're more than one color, you should play Command Tower.
Unless you're afraid of choke and you're in a mono blue deck and you want to run other blue sources.
Sure. If you're afraid of choke or boil flash fires at all.
Yeah.
Ruination is a good counter though. So I mean it just depends on like what you're trying to beat. But realistically, there's not very many situations where a monocolored deck I would play Command Tower. But anything more than one color, put the Command Tower in there.
Goes without saying, Prismatic Vista, Fetchland, Shockland, Dual Land packages I think are important. I really like the Triomes right now because the Triomes have the basic land types. When I'm playing five color decks, being able to play stuff that searches for forests specifically gives me a lot of flexibility when I'm playing Triomes because I can put the Triomes into play tapped with stuff like what's the elf, the 3-mana elf that puts a forest into play?
Wood elves,
or like Farseek, for example, can just drop it into play tapped and it gives me three colors. So
I dislike the Triomes because they haven't printed the Esper one yet, and that's the only one I need.
that's your thing, huh? I prioritize anything with green in it over anything else. Anything that's a forest, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these Triomes are just very good for fetchability's sake and things like that. So realistically, I think that like you're realistically fetches are probably mandatory. There are situations where, again, if you're playing a monocolor deck, you don't necessarily need to play fetch lands. If you're playing a mono brown deck, you don't necessarily need to play fetch lands. I don't think they're auto includes. But anything that helps out with multicolor mana bases to make it a little smoother, to make sure you can cast your spells, is always helpful. Like, Commander is much more of a game about casting your spells than even things like Modern Legacy, where it's just like, because Modern Legacy, there's just very little question of how frequently your mana base works. Commander is definitely one of those things that you need to be able to cast your spells. And the game goes long enough to give you extra time, but you just want to make sure that you can do those things in the beginning of the game. So I see a couple colorless lands in here. And I'm just going to say realistically, like, I don't think there's any colorless land that's an auto-include into any Commander deck. It's realistically, to me, it's the only potential auto-include land is Command Tower, but I just have the rule of make sure you can cast your freaking spells. Figure out your mana base so you can cast your spells. You thought Reliquary Tower and Blast Zone were important. I have friends that are like, you just have to play Strip Mine and Wasteland in every deck for just to interact with your opponent's lands because people could have, like, Kestig Wolf Run or whatever. And it's like, okay, I understand your statement, but no. I do not agree with it. Like, I don't think you need to be playing Strip Mine, Wasteland, Tectonic Edge, Field of Ruin, those sorts of lands. You don't really need those unless you have a very good reason. Like, I play all of them in my Xenagos deck because the deck literally can't beat the card Maze of Ith. If anyone puts a Maze of Ith into play, I literally can't kill them.
Yeah.
So I play all of, like, I play Strip Mine, Wasteland, Tectonic Edge. I didn't put Field of Ruin in the deck, but, like, I thought about it. But I play those lands because I literally can't beat, like, Corhaven and Maze of Ith. So, like, those things have to die.
Yeah.
So I put those lands in my deck to beat it. But, like, other than that, like, I don't think my red-green deck, even though it has Greater Good and Kozilek, I don't really need to include Reliquary Tower. Like, I don't need to have no maximum hand size. Like, is it convenient? Sure. But, like, it sometimes isn't it better than just having a forest. So...
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I just figured if there are two colorless lands that are most likely to show up in a majority of lists, it's probably those two. Strip Mine and Wasteland obviously belong on this list too for the same reasons.
They have a little bit of price consideration. Wastelands are still $20 or $30, and Strip Mines are still $10 or $11. So, like, it's very possible that you're not going to see a majority of decks have Strip Mine and Wasteland for cost considerations.
One thing to consider though is when you're in colors that can't deal with certain problems, you have to consider the ways that you can take care of those problems. So Blast Zone is just such a good catch all for so many decks that it's. Like, the cost to include this land that can do so many things for you is so valuable. Like, we're going to see when we look at red, like, Chaos Warp is, like, one of the most played red cards. And it's because it can do everything. And red has so many blind spots in terms of, like, permanent removal that, like, it needs Chaos Warp. It can deal with enchantments, which red, like, tends to struggle with, and, like, Planeswalkers. And so it's a really good way to deal with that. Blast Zone similarly can fit into red decks and deal with the same problem permanence. So I don't know that staple or auto include is the right word for it in this case, but it fits fills the niche.
I digress to going back to the monocolored mono brown deck statement. Like, realistically, if you are playing a two color deck, you probably have a way to answer most things. Good deck building would be, unless you're trying to play, like, I want to play cats. Like, there's probably not a cat card specifically, but, like, if your cat's deck is green-white, you can include answers to artifacts and enchantments. You can include answers to creatures, things like that. Like, those cards exist in those colors. So you can complement most cards, or most colors, with other colors to answer most everything. Black-red kind of being that exception. Not a lot of good enchantment removal in black-red. There's a couple pieces now. From recent printings, but, like, not a lot. So you probably need a Blast Zone in those. But, like, in your Esper deck or your whatever teamer deck, you don't need Blast Zone. You have enough answers to all of the generic different things that you should be able to get along.
Okay, enough said. Not an auto include. Let's move on to white. So I think we can go faster through these colors because they're a little more specific. I wanted to really concentrate on the artifact and land cards because they're overarching. They fit into, like, all of the decks. But I'm just going to basically list off the color-specific cards because these cards show up pretty, like, almost in every deck that includes white, blue, black, red, etc. And you can disagree if you'd like to. So here's white. Removal spells include Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Smothering Tide is, like, why not? The card is extremely powerful. And then
I think it might actually be the best card in Commander.
I think so too. And Land Tax is another one that's played rather frequently, but I think that one deserves a question mark. It's a cost restrictive include, but it's also, like, for one mana, it does a hell of a lot for decks that are white.
Yeah, absolutely. And it combines with, like, various different artifacts and then, like, cards like Brainstorm and things like that that care about putting cards back into your deck to just help you generate card advantage over time.
Yeah, even if you're not playing the lands, just getting three resources in your hand to, like, discard to, like, Faithless Looting or something, for example, is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So going back to Smothering Tithe, best card in Commander. Yeah, I might agree with that. If this card isn't included in Commander Legends, I'm going to be pretty frustrated because this is a not too recent printing, but it might be. Let's see. Is this in the scope of, like, what can't be reprinted yet?
I don't know.
It's rather expensive. because of its commander appeal. But yeah, it is one of those cards that like it's like it's on our auto includes list, right? So you really want it for your white decks. But it's still like $25-$30 despite being in like a pack that's been out in the last like what, 2 years or something.
Yeah.
So
it was in Ravnica. It's in the Ravnica sets. The newest Ravnica sets.
Guilds of
Ravnica. Yeah, this card definitely needs a reprint. Card is just, I think it's the best card in Commander. I don't own one. I didn't get it on the $5 floor, and now I feel kind of dumb. I'd like to have a couple of these, but like, yeah, this card is, I think it's just the best card in Commander by about a country mile.
All right, going on to blue, Cyclonic Rift, Fierce Guardianship, Mystic Remora, and Rhystic Study, kind of the same function there. And then I have Swan Song with a question mark. It's just such an efficient answer spell. You can add like counterspell and like negate to the list too, but
I think auto includes, I think kind of your list starts at Cyclonic Rift. I think it's like Cyclonic Rift and Rhystic Study for sure.
Yeah.
Mystic Remora, Fierce Guardianship, and Swan Song are kind of like, they're just very good blue cards. Like, they're on the outside looking in. Like, I'm not trying, I don't feel like I need to put Fierce Guardianship in every blue deck I play. I don't feel like I need to play Swan Song in every blue deck I play. Like, you know, but like, I definitely think that Cyclonic Rift, Rhystic Study are 100% like there.
Yeah, I think what makes these cards considered auto includes is that like it doesn't really matter what your commander is doing, and it doesn't really matter what your game plan is, but it's like you have a commander. Okay, well, Fierce Guardianship is a card that you're going to want to include because it's not really about really protecting your commander all the time, as the card is like seemingly intended to imply, but it's also a card that can just negate your opponent's huge payoff spell like Expropriate or something, right? And it's just, why not? Don't you want that? Don't you want that insurance?
I mean, I agree with that, but the question, you know, for me is do you have your commander in play?
Oh, based on the deck, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think frequently enough. I don't know. I guess I can't answer that question without knowing the commander, right? That's the point you're making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the statement of if your deck intends to have its commander frequently, Fierce Guardianship is extremely good.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, if your commander's there as a color support thing that like maybe is a later game play, Fierce Guardianship is less.
That's fair.
Excited.
That's fair. Okay. I'm hoping Mystic Remora is reprinted. That was on one of my list of the my Commander Legends wish list, along with Smothering Tithe, by the way. But I think that one would be a really sweet reprint, specifically for like some new art. Nothing against the fish, but I'd love to see
some. Give me the fish in a new frame, please.
Yeah, new frame. I want to see some full art on that guy.
Sure. That's fair.
Going to black, the tutors, vampiric tutor, demonic tutor. I mean, we already talked about that one.
Yeah.
Toxic Deluge and Damnation, probably the two most efficient wrath spells. And then Phyrexian Arena, is just a very strong draw spell. But that one, I definitely built decks where I don't include Phyrexian Arena and I'm in black.
I mean, if you have better options, I agree with that statement. I think Phyrexian Arena is just a really strong all-around card. Again, Demonic and Vampiric Tutor are just insanely good. It's one of those things that, like, unless you are making the statement, like, I'm not going to play tutors, like, you realistically should probably play these cards.
Yeah.
And then everybody likes to have a Wrath. Toxic Deluge beats Gaddic Teague. Damnation is just good old clean, destroy all the things. So I don't have any arguments with those.
Speaking of tutors, we could go back to white and blue and add like the Enlightened and Mystic Tutor to that list.
Mystic Tutor.
But yeah. But I don't know. I mean, they're a little more specific. It's likely that every single deck has some target for either one of those cards, so they probably belong. But
yeah.
I don't know if auto include is the right word for those.
Staple. They are very good. Like, they're certainly one of the cards you think of and you reach for in your white or blue deck. Like, is you evaluate, can I play Mystical Tutor? Like, do I have a target that matters enough that I need to draw it every game?
Yeah. Okay, in red, going on in red, Chaos Warp, Blasphemous Act, Dockside Extortionist. Here's a reprint target. This one ought to be included in Commander Legends. And then I have Vandal Blast with a question mark. This one just does so much work. I don't see why you don't play it. We talked about the value of all the mana rocks for 5 mana to just blow up all your opponent's progress. It seems worthwhile.
My red deck just didn't have a slot for it, and I've never made a slot for it.
Play it once, I don't know, and you won't go back.
Yeah, I knew it's a card. The only card I might argue for inclusion, I think all these are just, if you're playing red, you're very hard pressed to get me to not play Blasphemous Act or Chaos Warp. Dockside is insane. I think Vandal Blast is the only one. I'm like, I just don't have one in my deck. It's probably good. The one red card I would think to argue to put on this list is probably like Gamble.
Oh yeah, I guess Gamble could fit the bill. It's a tutor like the black cards. There are decks that have trouble playing Gamble, though. I mean, decks that go Hellbent pretty quickly. So if you're going to play Gamble, it's like, it's truly just like search your library for a card and discard it, which maybe is fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's just worth noting that, like, I think Gamble is definitely kind of a thing that gets on this list. We talked about, you know, maybe Vampire, Mystical, and Enlightened Tutor. Maybe Gamble. Gamble is very, very good.
Dockside, going back to that one, is an absurd card. That's one of those cards that you look at and you're like, how did this get past development? You know, it's like, who thought this was okay at 2 mana?
So it's more that they're just, like, for EDH, like, it doesn't really matter, like, what mana cost you're making this, in all honesty, because the whole goal is to take advantage of your opponents doing broken things, right? 2 mana just makes it like really, really good as a ritual. If your opponent's playing like fast mana or like a bunch of mana rocks, because like when your opponents play a bunch of mana rocks, there's very likely a situation where they're untapping those mana rocks, or like things like Mirari's Wake are being cast and things like that. And so like it's trying to take advantage of your opponents doing things like that.
Wait a sec.
It's taxing.
Dockside Extortionist enters the battlefield, create X treasure tokens where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. We just talked about how you basically have to include mana rocks to like function in this format. So I don't think that I would consider like including arcane signets and soul rings broken things. It's just like something that needs to be done. I'm gonna pay 2 mana and like net 5 treasures off of the fact that you're just like doing the circuit.
Let's make the statement that Sol Ring is extremely broken.
It's totally broken. I would love to see that card go from the damn format, but that's not a very popular opinion.
No, I too am of the opinion that all of the 0 mana ramp spell artifact ramp spells are not particularly necessary. But that's neither here nor there. We'll talk about one of those near future here. I'm going to send it straight to green, though. So green is just all of these just mana ramp, 2 and 3 mana ramp spells. 3 visits isn't on here because it's prohibitively expensive, but it is getting a reprint in Commander Legend or Commander whatever. Legends.
That should be in the list too, of course.
Yeah. Cultivate, Kadam's Reach, Farseek, Rampant Growth. Just search your deck for a land. Usually it's a basic. Put it into play.
Yeah. Sakura Tribe, Nature's Lore, 3 visits, the whole list.
Yeah. Yeah, there are two of them that aren't here that are 4 mana that most people play, Explosive Vegetation and Skyshroud Claim. Skyshroud Claim has the big boost of getting you 2 forests untapped. So if you have dual lands or shock lands, you can continue to extend your turn.
That's fair.
But yeah, those are kind of the big ones. Beast Within, so just another destroy a permanent. Giving your opponent a 3/3 beast in a green deck is not particularly relevant. So... And plus, everyone has 40 life, so the 3/3 beast has less impact. Eternal Witness, just getting back any one thing, just blinkable, just a very, very good card. And then Sylvan Library, just drawing 2 extra resources every turn and getting to use your life as a resource to be able to draw extra cards. So no real qualms here. This is another one of those Worldly Tutor could be something that you talk about because most of your green decks are going to have creatures. So searching for a creature is good. But not necessarily on that auto-include list.
Yeah, on that topic, I'm psyched for the Commander Collection Green. I think they really knocked it out of the park with that one. December 4th, that's going to be available. It's got the Bane of Progress, which is, I'd say it's, on the staple tier. Seedborn Muse on the staple tier. Omnath, Frey Elise, I don't know if that really fits any of these tiers, but it's a card that's cool. Sol Ring, Sylvan Library, Worldly Tutor, Command Tower. There's a lot of auto includes in this package.
Yeah.
And with all sweet new art. So there's a lot of cards that I don't currently have and have been eyeing up lately, and I'm like, yeah, I'll just wait till December. I gotta get me some Seedborn Muse cards, copies for my decks, but it's not anytime soon. I'll just hold out. So anyways.
One last group before we get to the fun spoiler things.
Yeah, before you do this one, I didn't really put anything in this list because I think this one's a little too subjective. So go ahead and say your piece, but I have all question marks.
It's too broad. It was a piece I was actually going to say. So multicolor is just hugely broad because it's depending on, well, what color combinations are you playing? Like, should you just guaranteed be playing cards if you're in certain color combinations?
Yeah.
Corey put a couple cards on here. Assassin's Trophy, Trigon Predator, Pernicious Deed. It's just depending on what color combinations you're in, kind of dictate. There are just cards that are just insanely good that you should consider. Like, if you're in black-white, you should probably play Merciless Eviction. Exiling powerful creatures or artifacts, enchantments, or planeswalkers is important. Yeah, if you're in green-white, you should probably... Angstermaking, Edoran, things like that. If you're in green-white, you should probably always be playing Mirari's Wake. There's not really an instance where I wouldn't play that card. So, depending on your color combination, there might be a card that you just look at and go, well, you just always play this card.
Yep.
But, it also depends on your design and things like that. I don't think there's really anything in the true auto-include section of the multicolored card list.
Yeah, I began the list, and then I was like, you know what? This is not really worthwhile. So I got as far as three cards, and I was like, I think we just chalk this up to
you realize the error of your ways.
Yeah. So I think we got a lot of progress made on the five colors, artifact, and land. And I think that's what's the most important to consider. But here's the segue now. So getting into Commander Legend spoilers, the question is, in the topic related to the current news and the current leaks, or no, I shouldn't say leaks, I'm sorry, the current previews is, which of the following, and I'm going to give you a couple of discussion topics here, do you consider to be new additions to this list? Okay, so here's the first one, and this one came out just shortly after our podcast was recorded last week, so we just missed the boat on this one, being able to discuss this.
Sure.
And I think you can probably see where I'm headed with some of these, but let's go there, okay? Jeweled Lotus is Black Lotus for commanders. It is zero mana for a mythic. Tap, sacrifice Jeweled Lotus, add three mana of any one color, spend this mana to cast your commander. Is this considered an auto include? And feel free to give your general reactions on this card.
So my first reaction was, this card's pretty fucking good. We're gonna get the explicit tag for this one.
Yeah.
And then I sat and talked about it with people for 10 minutes, and they were like, "Oh, it's broken." And I finally came to the conclusion: this card's hot garbage.
No, shut up.
This card is hot garbage. So this is going to fall into the camp of: are you playing a mono-colored commander that you want in play? If so, play Jeweled Lotus. Two color commander, you can maybe convince. Anything past two color commanders, card's hot garbage. It's only paying a commander tax. It's bad in multicolored, past two color commanders. It's bad.
I disagree.
So okay, sell me on it. So yeah, sure. If I'm playing a five mana commander, I can play Jeweled Lotus and play it on turn three.
Yeah.
Turn two, sorry. But that's asking the question, is my five mana commander impactful enough to matter being in play on turn two?
Yeah. So
some commanders aren't. Some commanders you just look at and you go, that's not that impactful.
To make my point, I have to share some background information. First of all, this card is pre-ordering at $125. Okay.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you. It is a mythic. Wow. Obviously, this is the one that was included to sell packs. I think this card is stupid as hell. I hate this. Okay, I think it's dumb. I am opposed to fast mana in this format. We're gonna have that discussion another day. I have found out from discussion with many other players that that is an unpopular opinion, and that people are really, they really cherish their soul rings and their mana vaults and their mana crypts in the format, and so I'll just shut up about that. But I don't think it really promotes a very fun game experience. Like I feel like the difference between having an opening hand where one player at a table of four players has, you know, mana acceleration in the form of Soul Ring and the other three don't, just makes for an unbalanced start to the game, and it's not necessary. You know what I mean? And so just removing that element from the game levels the playing field in a way that makes for a more enjoyable game. It doesn't mean that that player has an unfair advantage necessarily, because what they're going to do is they're going to create a big target on their head, and then everyone's going to go after them. They might lose the game more often than they win the game. I don't know what the statistics are on that. Depends what their commander is. Depends how they build their deck. But this card is just more of that bullshit, because all it does is allows you to get your four mana commanders out if you so find this in your opening hand, or your five mana commanders out on turn two if you find this in your opening hand or after the draw, right? I mean, you get eight cards, right? Because you're playing multiplayer, so you draw a card in a multiplayer game, even if you go first. So, all right, that said, the question that I asked was, is this a staple? And my answer is no, it's not a staple, right? Or not an auto include, obviously.
No, but, I mean, that's kind of where I was approaching it from. Is like, this card, sorry, go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
But in terms of like, it being hot garbage, I don't think you could say it's hot garbage. I think it absolutely creates problematic and imbalanced situations for decks that are playing certain commanders. I've seen this is a permanent, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen the argument for like what Dark Ritual can do to like race out commanders like Sidisi, for example, and like find, you know, the combo pieces right off the bat. We've seen that in like CEDH a ton on Magic Online. It was stupid. That deck existed for a while. I forgot what that did. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it's just, you just played Sidisi, tutored for Ad Nauseam, Ad Nauseam. Your life total was always, if you were at 40, your CMC of your deck was less than 40, so you drew your whole deck and you like played a bunch of zeros and 10.
Yeah,
and
in Necrotic Ooze, right? Wasn't there something with that? Necrotic Ooze and some dumb guy?
No, you couldn't really do the Necrotic Ooze Triskelion combo, because then the CMC of the cards in your deck was greater than 40.
Well, there's something else. I don't remember what it was, but basically my point is, like, to have something like that, that's just a tutor, right? Like, there are definitely generals that can abuse this sort of thing. And now this is a permanent that can be returned to play. So, like, cards like Emery, for example, obviously don't benefit as much from this because you are, like, overpaying for a card like Emery. However, then you have excess mana to do other things with it. But to just continue to put a card like this into play and loop the mana, you know, obviously the mana can only be spent on your commander, but there's something here. You know, if it's not just to put like a Grand Arbiter into play on turn one and just make your opponent miserable and behind,
right,
then I don't know. You know, then there's something else, right?
So when I make the claim hot garbage, I should explain that it's a bit of an overreaction, but still kind of there in the general of a game of EDH, like general, you sit down and play with three random people.
Yeah.
I don't think that the number of commander decks that's going to be playing Jewel Lotus is going to be, the over under, I think, is lower than two. Because
in a four player game,
in a random four player game.
Okay.
I don't know these three people. There may or may not be prizes on the line. Like, just totally unknown.
Well, it's also $125, right?
So assuming everyone had the money, I still don't think you would see that many of them.
Oh, okay.
Because realistically, like, there are commanders, like you said, Grand Arbiter, the gods, like Xenagos, things like that, that you play this card on turn two, and your opponent is in for a world hurt.
Yeah.
But, like, most commanders, it doesn't really matter if your commander's in play three turns early. And the draw is so bad that, like, in the mid game, that, like, you, when you're trying to play Battlecruiser Magic, like, playing your commander in the midst of, like, trying to throw haymakers, is very rarely are there commanders that are truly a haymaker enough to warrant playing a card like this. So, yeah. Like, that's my reflection on the format. It's like, if you look at just the general collection of humans, I think that there will be less than two of these in any one game, even if they were $20 a piece.
Okay, all right, so not a staple, but...
No, but definitely a very good card.
Okay, all right, so that changes your tone a little bit. You kind of implied that it was...
I was definitely firing a hot... I was nearly definitely firing a hot take.
All right,
what is your next card?
Okay, I have at least one more. I think I really only have one more, but we could, you know, just for the sake of conversation, have some, you know, include some others.
Sure.
But do you know what my other one is? Can you guess?
Is it an artifact?
No, it's not an artifact. But is there an artifact that you can think of?
That people might want to use in that way, Horizon Stone. Yes.
Oh. No, that's not one on my list. We can talk about that. All right. So the next one is Opposition Agent.
Really tough. Yeah.
I think this card belongs on the list for black. That's my take. Yes, this is an auto include for black.
I'm going to read it for those of us who don't know what it is.
Yeah, go
ahead. It's two and a black for a 3/2 human something or other. I'm trying to find it.
It's a human rogue.
Human rogue with flash. When your opponent searches their deck, you control their search. When an opponent is searching their deck, you get to exile every card they find, and you may play those cards for as long as they're exiled, and you may spend mana as if it were mana of any color to cast them.
Yeah, you said that kind of funny.
So, functionally, what this does is... I'll explain it better, because I was scrolling to find it, and it was at the top of the page.
Okay.
So what it does is, if your opponent casts Demonic Tutor, and you cast this in response, you get to search your opponent's deck for them, and find a card. And instead of that card going to your opponent's hand, it is exiled under your control. And you may cast that card as long as it is exiled, and you may pay mana as if it were mana of any color. So if your opponent casts Demonic Tutor in their blue-black deck, and you get to search their deck for them, you could go get their Blue Sun Zenith. And if they're an infinite mana deck, they now just don't have their Blue Sun Zenith to kill you. And if you want, you can randomly cast it and draw 5 or 6 cards.
Scape shift.
Get
their scape shift.
That is a very tame way to explain what the card does, but yes, there are cards that when you cast this, it will be backbreaking. Fetch lands, people will not be very happy when you counter their fetch land with this.
Yeah.
Demonic Tutor, Scape Shift is a good one. Diabolic Revelation is one that I see in EDH that this is going to destroy. Tooth and Nail, another good one.
Doomsday one? What's that do?
It searches your hand deck and library, like hand deck and graveyard.
Yeah, and they pay five, like half their life or something, right?
Yeah, but you could just pick nothing and then deck
them. I love this. This card is sweet. Like auto include, to me means like I said prior, it's just a card that why not play, and this one absolutely is a why not play. Like every deck has some kind of search. You know, we talked about fetch lands being included in every deck, Solemn Simulacrum being a big play. There's no reason not to put this in if you're in black because the payoff is so huge for it. You know, it goes to show how far out their design is, because I don't think that they would have come up with this during the pandemic. Where people are playing spell table commander. Like, can you imagine how miserable this is gonna be?
Oh my god, no.
Like every time someone like searches. I mean, obviously once it's in play, like you're just gonna not search, but you do get them once because it's got flash.
Oh yeah, 100% you get them once.
Oh man,
I'm just kind of
it's paired with Marin the Mourn Song on Mythic. Spoiler, that would be a good general to play this with. That's gross.
That would just be the end of the game, yes.
Yeah. So
nobody gets a new card. Everyone loses 3 life. You get all the cards. Like, yes.
Yeah.
It is not very fun for anyone involved.
All right.
Scrolling through cool cards, trying to find things that we should talk about.
Yeah, we can just generally talk now. Oh, any lands that we need to talk about for auto includes? There are some new lands. War Room. Pay life equal to the number of colors in your commander's color identity. Draw a card. It's a colorless mana or colorless land.
Yep, that's the land. That land is going in every deck.
Okay.
Just every deck, yeah. Just every deck, because at worst, it's pay 5 life, draw a card.
I mean, that's a lot of life.
Sure. So maybe you don't put it in your 5-color commander. Like, you could put it in, like, Ramos, unless it says color identity.
It does. Color identity, yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm big stupid.
I mean, it's definitely very, very good.
Yeah, it's very good. So Horizon Stone was the card I thought you were talking about, which is if you would lose unspent mana, it becomes colorless mana instead as a 5-mana artifact.
Yeah.
I might just be grossly overestimating how much people would put would play Crucifix if they could.
Yeah.
Without making it their commander. But I mean, I guess the draw to Crucifix is literally you always have access to it. Whereas, like, this thing is, like, you would have to jump through some sort of hoop to have access to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this card is very good, no doubt. I mean, it's tough to consider anything, like, that costs more than 4 mana to be an auto-include. Unless it's, like, Cyclonic Rift, you know? Like, obviously that one goes on the list because of how versatile it is. But this is big mana, you know, and anything that just multiplies your mana like this can is worth consideration. And multiply is kind of a strong word for this, but this adds up.
Yeah, it does.
Big time. Any turn where you're like, you're just top decking nothing and you just like can add like, you know, 10 mana to your mana pool and be like, well, I guess I didn't do nothing this turn. Like, that'll come in handy later.
You just bank your mana.
Yeah.
Any of the new order cycle that you want to talk about that you think are impressive?
New what?
So there's a cycle of enchantments that make you the monarch. I believe they're called orders.
Oh,
courts.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Green. Go on.
So I'll read that one. I'll find it and read it for you. So there are enchantments of various costs that are when it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put, this one is the green one specifically, you may put a land card from your hand on the battlefield. If you are the monarch, instead you may put a creature or land card onto the battlefield. This is just a strong card. There's nothing more to be said about this one. The black one is kind of mediocre. The blue one is a mill-based one, so I'm not particularly interested in it. The white one generates tokens, so I'm not particularly interested there either. And I don't know what the red one is. I haven't seen the red one.
Green one is by far the best one.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I don't know what the red one is either. I don't know if it's been revealed yet, actually.
I do not see it, so...
But I do really like the Monarch mechanic, and you know I mentioned last week that I'm really jazzed about anything that like encourages people to attack players that have some kind of advantage to just sort of help people like you know encourage some like you know positive threat assessment when it's difficult to determine like who to target with your spells, and Monarch is a good way of doing that. It's like you know that player has this big advantage right now. Drawing an extra card every turn is a big advantage, so you know adding this like sub game of passing that around the table is really cool. I think that more cards that put the monarch into play is needed. Like it's weird that like there are some really powerful cards. What's the white uncommon 2WW that like exiles a creature and you become the monarch?
Oh, that's not an uncommon. That's definitely a rare. It's Palace Dealer.
No, it's an uncommon.
No, it's not.
Google it.
There's no way. There's no way.
It's an uncommon. Yeah, it's an uncommon from Conspiracy.
There's no way that is an uncommon.
That card might be pretty close to my auto-includes list.
Holy cow. I can't believe it's an uncommon.
Yeah,
it's
that card is very, very strong. And that one, that's one of the few that I think like gets played, you know, widely enough to like really put that mechanic in play. I think we're going to see more now with this green one being played. And there might be some others that are going to show up in this set that really introduce that mechanic to the game more often. And like I said, that's good. That's a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like not treating it like racing, where it's like we just ignore each other and race by. Mm-hmm. Like having cards that cause people to play the game with other people and interact is good. Yeah. I got a list of a few cards here to talk about that are just either ridiculous and or very good.
Yeah.
So my first one is Apex Devastator.
Okay.
Which is
good.
It's 8 green for a 10/10 Chimera Hydra.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it just cascades 4 times. So you cast this 10 mana spell from your hand, or you cast this 10 mana spell, period, and you get to cascade 4 times.
Yep. It's cool.
It can hit anything in your deck. It's kind of dumb. It's just basically pay 10 mana, get a 10/10, and draw 4 cards.
Yeah. It's like super fun because it's really, it isn't overpowered by any stretch. It's just really fun. You're paying for it because if you're not, cascade doesn't happen, and then you just get a 10/10 with no abilities. And when you do that, like you just might get like Llanowar Elf, Findhorn Elf, Cultivate,
Rampant, yeah, nonsense.
So it could just be really disappointing, but it's fun to, you know, the unknown is always exciting, so it's worth it.
I mean, this is functionally Kozilek, where the 4 spells have omniscience.
Yeah.
So like, that's really, really good. But yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Would you rather pay 10 for this 10/10 that really is just gonna get chumped by Sapperlings, or would you pay 9 mana, 1 fewer, for a sorcery that searches for 10 land cards, put them on the battlefield tapped, and shuffle your library?
How did you know that was the next card on my list, literally?
would you just like to get 6 more permanents and just make sure that they're lands?
Well, that card is called Reshape the Earth.
Yeah.
And this is just a bizarre card. So, like, this is a card you want to combine with Mana Rocks because you want to, like, accelerate into this on, like, turn 4. But then it just gives you more mana and you have no payoff.
Yeah.
So, like, you're looking for, like, what is my payoff to 10 permanents? And so, like, the things I think of immediately are Field of the Dead, Arch of Orozca, War Room.
Maze's End.
Maze's End. Oh, Maze's End just kills people. Wow, that's...
Maze's End, 9 mazes activated on your next turn.
Oh, no. Oh, no. And if you play Amulet of Vigor, you just win the game?
Yeah.
Oh no. But no, I was just thinking of like general what are decent payoff cards for this. And so like your card draw lands like War Room and Arch Verazka, Field of the Dead. So Field of the Dead for creatures. Getting your copy lands like Thespian Stage and Vesuva are always good.
Yeah.
Dark Depths is another good one. In your Gruul decks, you get Inkmoth Nexus and Kessig Wolf Run, so that's a kill condition in 2 lands. So these are the kind of things I'm thinking of and I'm looking at when I'm evaluating. Like, I can go get 10 lands. Like, where am I getting my value at in going and getting 10 lands?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do that. I mean, we talked about the value of lands. Absolutely. I think if you're putting 10 lands in play, you're in a good position to just win the game after that.
Absolutely. I just kind of the statement I'm making is think about, you know, if you're going to include this card in your deck, you want to have a strategy for like, what am I realistically trying to go get with this card?
Yeah. Yep.
Because this is not a card that goes in every deck.
No.
But if you design your mana base with this in mind, like you are a lands deck, this card is just like insanely good.
Yeah. All right, then. So I got a couple to talk about. I alluded to the turtle earlier, and I'm very excited about this turtle. I'm definitely gonna build the turtle. All
right, hit me with the turtle. It's so, probably terrible.
No, it's definitely not terrible. I think that they've really knocked it out with the commander, the multicolor commander includes in here. Obviously, the partners are a big ad. Those guys were in need of reprints. Some of them, like, very expensive, like the Timnas and stuff of the world, Timnas and Siddhar and et cetera, et cetera. But the new ones that they've included are just really interesting, and I'm super psyched for Archelos or Archelos Lagoon Mystic. It's one Salt Eye for a 2/4 legendary creature, Turtle Shaman. Do you know this one, Daryl?
I don't.
Oh, man. It's a rare. It says, as long as Archelos Lagoon Mystic is tapped, other permanents enter the battlefield tapped. As long as Archelos is untapped, other permanents enter the battlefield untapped. So he's like an Amulet of Vigor. It's not a triggered ability. They just enter untapped. But he's also like a... Is Kismet the right word? That's in the enchantment that makes him come into play tapped. That like basically stasises your opponent's helps you set up stasis locks for your opponent's spells and makes your spells your permanents faster, I should say, not spells. I know it's obnoxious, but it's also really cool. So all of those like Kairu lands from Ravnica that, you know, the bounce lands, I should say, are looking really appealing for this guy. You can play three of them in here. Plus, then you've got like, you know, a set of like the older ones that add colorless blue, colorless green, colorless black.
This is also very good with Lotus Field.
Yeah, Lotus Field, Lotus Veil. Yeah, this guy's cool. He's a 2/4, kind of irrelevant, but you probably are going to need to attack with him sometimes if you don't find something like Freed from the Real to just like, you know, tap him artificially, because you do need to tap him down. I'm sure you can find a better way to do that.
There are tons of ways to do that. Springleaf Drum comes to mind.
Yeah, that's good.
The Cryptolith Rite, things like that.
Mm-hmm, Cryptolith Rite's good.
I don't like where your head's at, Corey.
Yeah, well, I'm probably not going to build a stasis deck out of this guy, but I am going to build a fancy, like, comes into play untapped deck out of this guy, and it's probably going to be Maze's End. Can I do that?
Sure.
I don't think I have enough mazes, actually.
Yeah, you need more colors. You need four colors to have enough mazes.
He could be included in a five-color Maze's End deck, and maybe I'll do it that way. Okay. Obika Chronologist is the other one. I just have one more. And this is just another one that's got an interesting design for a commander. I like when the commanders have a design that makes you think like, oh, this is something that's never been done before. This is a deck that I could build. Obika is one blue, black, red for a 3/4 Ogre Wizard. Art's really badass. It has tap. The player whose turn it is may end the turn. It's like a Sundial of the Infinite.
I like it.
Yeah, so you could play cards like Glorious End or something, which like has the effect at the beginning of your next end step, you lose the game, and then like before that trigger kills you, you just like tap this dude to end the turn.
So here's the ridiculous thing about this card. This card is functionally a City of Solitude.
Explain.
Okay, so I control this card, and it's your turn.
Yeah.
And then a third player casts an instant speed time stretch.
Yeah.
On your turn. I'm going to tap this card and say, would you like to end the turn, Corey? And you would go, I actually would. I do not want that time stretch to resolve.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, so they just can't do that on your turn. They have to do it on their turn, right?
Yes, it's functionally City of Solitude, because you can choose whatever turn you want to end, because I don't mind ending my turn if City of Solitude or if time stretch isn't resolving or whatever,
right,
or if some big scary instant isn't resolving. And so, like, this is a very odd City of Solitude.
Yeah, that's fair.
That also randomly has the synergy with those cards like Glorious End and Final Fortune.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just the...
A lot of people brought up like Cedrus Unearth. Like, if you unearth a creature and then you end the turn before the end of the turn, they no longer have to exile themselves because they, you know, because the turn has ended prematurely.
Yes.
So you keep them in play when you unearth them, that kind of thing. There's a lot of kind of fancy little tricks that you can do with this guy.
Yes. All right.
Okay, go ahead. You got a couple more, you said?
Yeah, my next one is Port Razor. So it's 3 red for a Orc
pirate. I thought it was a human pirate when I looked at it. Whenever Port Razor deals combat damage to a player, untap each creature you control. After this combat, there is an additional combat. Port Razor cannot attack a player it has already attacked this turn.
Yeah.
That's a lot
of
combat.
You like that stuff, don't you?
Well, I mean, when you pair it with Xenagos, it is quite interesting.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah,
I'm not into the whole like extra combat phase stuff, but I just don't like attacking. I'd rather build an incomprehensible board state and make everyone miserable.
I mean, so I have a deck that is literally just I'm gonna attack people, because sometimes you just want to play a fast game. So sometimes you just gotta battle people.
Yeah.
And that's my Xenagos deck, so I'm here for that.
Yep. Fair enough.
One that I think people are going to misevaluate a lot.
Yeah.
Is Root Weaver Druid.
Oh yeah, that guy is sick. That guy is very cool.
It's very hard to evaluate. So whenever Root Weaver Druid enters the battlefield, each opponent may search their library for up to 3 basic land cards. They each put one of those cards onto the battlefield tapped under your control, and the rest on the battlefield tapped under their control. Each player who searches the library this way then shuffles it.
Yeah, so they get 2 and you get 1 each time. But with 2 opponents, everyone gets 2, right? With 3 opponents, you're up
everyone,
3,
you get 3,
they get 2. It's hard to say no to that. Like, that's the problem. It's like when everyone's got the opportunity to put 2 basic lands into play, how can you pass up on that? Especially when everyone else is participating in it. But I think the right move is to for everyone, like, at a certain point, they're like, oh, we've seen Root Weaver Druid before. We know what we're supposed to do. No. You know
Zero.
What I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah, thank you.
You get a 2-1 elf druid. Enjoy it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will misevaluate that this card is not particularly good and play it in their deck. And then a lot of people, after that person cast it, will misevaluate how to utilize this ability and go, I would like 2 basic lands. So I'll search for 3. And then that snowball effect that you just talked about will happen. And then that will cause people who see it to evaluate it as better than it is. And then people will figure it out. And then I think it will go in a circle.
Yeah.
Until it sticks in everyone's mind that this card's just not good.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I like the design. I wish it was just like they had to.
Yes. If it wasn't a May, this card would be very, very playable. But it is a May, so...
And it would kind of be like, it would kind of feel like Dockside Extortionist if it was a they had to. Just, you know, like the ETB, like, big mana advantage type of thing. Now, it provides it for your opponents, too. But, you know, the fact that you can just, like, blink this and net one over your opponents each time in a 4-player game, it seems pretty abusable.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. All right. And there's one last card I want to talk about, and I'm done.
Okay.
Which is Arumi of the Dead Tide. So 1 blue-black legendary creature merfolk wizard 1/4. Exile cards from your graveyard equal to the number of opponents you have. Target creature card in your graveyard gains encore until end of turn. Its encore cost is equal to its mana cost.
Yeah. This guy's seems like a rare, doesn't it? It's an uncommon.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that sounds like a powerful rare effect.
Yeah.
It really does. Because, like, this card plus Sundial of the Infinite is going to make so many people unhappy. Like, this is definitely one of those cards where you're just like, I'm going to get back. Like, the first annoying card that came to mind for me for this card was Cephalid Constable.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one that's like when it deals damage, your opponent's bounce permanence equal to the number or to the amount of damage dealt?
Let me verify that. It is, yes. When it deals damage to a player, return up to that many permanents that player controls to their owner's hand.
Yeah. So, like, this is a thing where I just see, like, I'm going to make 3 Cephalid Constables. I'm going to attack you. You're going to bounce permanent. I'm going to end the turn and keep my Cephalid Constables. And then, like, I'm going to pump my Cephalid Constables and just, like, make you absolutely miserable. I'm a bad person. That's
Wait,
the first thing I thought.
How do you keep your Cephalid Constables?
Sundial of the Infinite.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, you encore trigger on the stack, you just like you end the turn and gotcha. You have all of the tokens. Yes, yeah. This is not going to be pleasant.
Okay, so this guy goes in your Obika deck.
Oh yeah, it does fit in that deck. Yeah. How about that? Yeah, this guy definitely goes in that deck.
Cool.
But yeah, that was the last one. I thought it was just a very good design. Just like exile 3, pay some mana, make 3 token copies of like a solid creature. It gives you like 3 enter the battlefield. So like realistically, another really good card to compare with this. How about 3 Solemn Simulacrums?
Oh god, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to do with this guy. This feels like a green-black card. I don't understand the blue with it, really.
It's the I think Encore inherently is kind of like a blue token copy thing. I think is where it comes from. The black is graveyard, the blue is token copy. So, yeah. But yeah, like making 3 Moldrifters or 3 Solemn Simulacrums or, you know, similar type things. 3 Sakura Tribuilders if you happen to be in, you know, Sultai or something like that. This card just seems like inherently extremely powerful.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in this set. I think they've done a really good job making some super fun mechanics here. Like, the Salamander guy is really unique. There's, like, the Mana Burn dude. Like, there's some really fun stuff. So, I give them credit for that. And I think this is a great place to experiment with those types of mechanics. So, kudos to WotC for that.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, man. Well, I think we'll wrap up on that. That was a lot of talking, Commander. I'm sure we'll have some more to do next week. More spoilers coming out. I don't know about you, but I'm thinking that I'll probably be picking up a box of this and doing a sealed over spell table.
I don't think I'll be purchasing this because money is a little tight. So.
Oh, okay. Feel it.
But well, I will be purchasing cards from it for sure.
Yeah, singles. Okay. All right. Well, I'm jazzed about it. I'm looking forward to talking more about it, and we'll do that next week.
Take it easy.
All right, take it easy.
Peace.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardNockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to manatraders.com, mtgcast.com, and thediscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Card Knock Life content.